Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
Get a free audiobook of your choice at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording. This is Abe minus Aaron. Aaron is out doing some various other things for the podcast, and we've got a special treat for everybody today. We've got Lowell Dean, the writer-director of Wolf Cop. It's very, very cool to always have some Q&As with writers and directors, and again, here we are with Lowell Dean.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining us, and let's just get right into it. So, how does the concept of Wolf Cop come up?
Comes up by accident, honestly. Just wanting to make a film and having a bunch of different ideas and talking it over with friends and kind of gravitating towards what's the craziest thing that we could make and that we could actually pull off, you know, with a limited indie horror film budget. And
right.
I feel like we're in a really good time for high concept now. They're not always great films. They're not always good films, but I think there's a big demand, from my perspective, for really crazy stuff. And I knew, even just telling my friends, you know, when I had the idea, I could tell by their reaction that this was an idea worth exploring.
Yeah. Were any of your friends in the movie?
Oh, yeah. All of my friends, all my family, pretty much everybody who's suffered through, you know, when you make films, I don't know how everyone does it, but you come up through short films or working on other projects, and I've made many of my friends suffer through, you know, leading roles or no dialogue or getting fake blood dumped on them. So it was the least I could do when I finally had, you know, even a small feature to, you know, put them on screen, at least in the background or walking in a room or getting their face ripped off.
Absolutely, yeah. And then you had mentioned, you know, making all these short films and whatnot. I briefly checked out your IMDb page. Great photo, by the way.
Thanks.
But yeah, you've made a lot of short films, and are any of them available online for people to check out if they haven't seen Wolf Cop?
That's a good question. I don't think any of them are right now. I don't think so. I mean, I've had them online at some point, but I don't really have like a one-stop shop where I keep them all. Not at least not online. Maybe that's a good thing. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Could be. Juice Pig sounds very weird.
It's pretty great.
Okay.
I must say, in all modesty, it's, well, great in quotes. It was one of my more fun short films, and a lot of the people who were in it found their way into Wolf Cop. And yeah. It's I've always loved cops. I've always loved idiot, crazy cops, and that's kind of what Juice Pigs was a pretty much the stupidest guys you could imagine being on the police force, and things like with Wolf Cop get quite violent quite quickly.
One thing I like about Wolf Cop, so quite honestly, I was probably a little bit more positive on Wolf Cop than the other folks on the panel.
Thanks. But talking to you then.
We would be nice anyway. One of the things I liked about Wolf Cop was you did get a sense of Lou's backstory. You know, he's like this kind of a drunkard cop who maybe doesn't really take his job that seriously, son of a cop too, and you see him progress, and then he becomes Wolf Cop, and it's almost like a Teen Wolf transition where he becomes ultra cool when he becomes this Wolf Cop. The story of Lou, is that, did you mean for him to be such a quote-unquote loser, and then he becomes really affable and, you know, becomes his alter ego, so to speak?
Definitely. I think Lou's forgotten what it's like to be a person. I think he's literally just a sad excuse for a bag of flesh who just drinks. That's all he does, and he really has no purpose. And I think it takes him, one of our early log lines when we were trying to like pitch the story was, sometimes it takes becoming a werewolf to become a better man. And that was the idea behind it was, only when he, you know, he's so sad and deep down within himself that it takes him becoming this wolf cop to actually remember, hey, I can be a person, I can do a good job, I can have fun, I can get the lady, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And the other thing that's cool about it is, kind of like you mentioned, as the movie progresses, he does settle down a lot more. You know, he actually goes to the library to go and research some things. He takes over for Tina to clean up a few things, even though he's the cause of some of those,
Yeah.
you know, bloodletting items. So, but yeah, he becomes a little bit more serious, and I think that's what I appreciated about the movie more than something like Zombievers. I'm not gonna talk down to Zombievers. A movie's a movie. Yeah. It takes a lot of work. But yeah, you know, those characters are a little bit more just there. But that's what I liked.
We wanted. I mean, that was a big thing for us. I mean, you know, it's like you said, a movie is a movie, and it's a heck of a lot of work. Even yeah. like people are shocked when I tell them, even for a movie called Wolf Cop, you know, we had only 17 days, and we were running and gunning, and it was a crazy shoot.
17 days.
Yeah, it was insane, yeah. And you know, a million, just over $1 million Canadian dollars. So. Not a lot of money, very similar in experience to a lot of the short films I've done, but still, you know, you still want to not just have it hang on a title and be just a really stupid name. You want to have at least a little character development in with the sex and blood and so on.
Right, yeah. And then you mentioned sex and blood, but the blood, so everything, everybody on the panel that night, we agreed that the transformation was so good for a movie of this magnitude, per se. And, you know, I probably haven't really seen anything like this in a while where a werewolf transforms and his flesh is literally being ripped off
yeah.
to reveal this dark, dark fur. And how did you do that? And what was the concept behind that?
That was just a love of werewolf movies. And I mean, maybe that turned out so good because we really were swinging for the fences. I mean, we knew we'd never hit American Werewolf in London, and we certainly didn't have the time to compete with it or the money, but
right.
But that was our benchmark, right? So we said, we've got to do a transformation that's memorable. That's maybe more important than anything because this is a werewolf movie. So myself and the effects artist, Emerson Ziffel, sat down and really just talked it through and said, made a list of shots we want to see. And I talked about what I wanted to see from a werewolf movie, and he talked about what he wanted to see. And we kind of found what was in the middle, and we wanted it to be, he wanted it to be painful, and I wanted it to be shocking. So that pretty much directed us directly to the body parts we'd show, how we'd show them. And honestly, it was very, on the day that we shot, it was very very clinical and not really that exciting. It was great to see it cut together, but we really just said, okay, now close up of face. And we had like one face to do, to rip. Mm-hmm. And close up of hand, and we had one hand to rip. And, you know, occasionally we'd say, we have a bucket of goo. Let's just dump it on Leo and see what happens. And and some of them didn't work. You know, there was two or three other shots that we just ran out of time, or the prosthetic wasn't looking great, or we couldn't, we couldn't find the right angle. But I think we got what we needed, and that was the fun part.
And this certainly is, at least to me, what comes across the connotation is that it's painful. It's he's going through this horrific transformation, and you can really see it in his eyes and the way that his facial features kind of portray this sort of pain and maybe confusion. And it is memorable, quite memorable. I mean, I don't know how many other penis shots there are in a movie where it transforms. So just the whole entire ripping of the flesh is just so not something that I easily forget.
Yeah, Leo is a trooper. I mean, just know that for every second that he screams on camera, he probably did it 20 times that didn't make the cut, you know, just getting up to that moment, finding that right shot.
Right.
So he was just physically exhausted by the end. And
that's on the B-roll DVD extras, right?
Oh, yeah, you can see some of it. And he, you know, I can't imagine anyone who could take as much as him. Leo really is a trooper.
Awesome. And speaking of your cast, how long did it take you to cast the movie?
I think it was not too long. I mean, I'd written the role for Leo, so I knew I wanted him in. And Amy Matisio, who plays Tina, I had known her previously, so I was kind of thinking she'd be a really good foil to him and very funny. And the rest of the cast, they kind of came together just through traditional casting calls and you know, knowing when you see them. And we, you know, for a small movie, we got to see a lot of options. I think for all of our principal characters, I probably saw 20 or more people, and it just, you just knew when you saw it, you know, like when I saw Sarah Lynn, her look for Jessica was perfect, and she had herself done up, and she had like the swagger down and the femme fatale, And Jonathan Cherry for Willie. I mean, Willie was a really hard one too. You know, it was hard to find that person who, because you know, you don't give everyone the information necessarily when you put out a casting call. Sometimes it's just inherent, and you don't have the benefit of sitting down and having like coffee with them and saying, "Here's what we're looking for." So often you're casting on a look and you're casting on instinct. And both Sarah and Jonathan knew, you could tell in their tape what the kind of movie was. You know, it was funny, but it was kind of taken seriously. And you'd be surprised. Many people, some people played it as serious as if it was, you know, Shakespeare. And other people were just so slapstick ridiculous, you could barely listen to a sentence. So it was really cool to see the people who found the tone and just got it.
Yeah, and you mentioned Jonathan Cherry, and I remember thinking about him while I watched the movie, and I was like, where have I seen this guy before? And then I remember he's in Goon.
Yes,
and
he's a great guy in Goon.
Yeah,
he's from Regina, Saskatchewan.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, guys, I'm on your team.
And you know, that kind of, I mean, I hate to say it, there was always those little fluky things that you didn't know at the time, and then as soon as you heard it, you're like, well, damn it, we have to cast him. You know, like, I didn't know he had the mustache still in his casting video, and he was just so funny. And when someone told me he played a guy from Regina in Goon, I was like, oh, well, that's done, you know? And Sarah Lynn also was from Regina. So there was all these Saskatchewan connections that just felt very fortuitous.
Yeah, so it's almost like a local indie film coming together.
Totally.
But, yeah, for Jonathan, what I really liked about Willie is I latched onto the character because he's a good friend to Lou.
Yeah.
You know, he's helping him out when he's not freaked out by Lou turning into a werewolf, and he puts him in a cell, gives him some clothes, you know, gives him some whiskey in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, Willie, no.
I know, it's hard. I mean, that's like their relationship was always, to me, the heart of the film, even, you know, and it evolved over several drafts. But to me, I think part of the reason that you feel that way about Willie is because I genuinely did too. I mean, it's the relationship between Willie and Lou. I've seen many reviews kind of call the movie a buddy cop movie, and that's what it was to me. I love their, you know, good cop, bad cop, the straight character and the absurd character.
Right. Yeah. And I think that really comes across, especially when they're going to liquor donuts, isn't it?
Yeah, liquor donuts.
Yeah. And, you know, they're just stopping a robbery in progress. And then, you know, Lou decides to just soup up his car right next door.
Yeah, as always happens, right?
It's just so convenient. But, you know, Willie just goes with it. He's like, okay. My favorite thing about that, too, is there's a, I don't know who it is, but there's a transient fellow at the end. He's like, hey, Lou. And it's like, oh, well, I guess everyone knows that it's Lou.
Yeah, actually, what's funny is, you know, there's some stuff that hit the cutting room floor, and oddly, I mean, now that I think about it, I'm amazed that people still find that scene funny, because it's kind of a rhyming scene to, there was supposed to be a scene earlier in the film where human Lou sees that hobo, and he says, hey, Lou, and it's like the exact same scene repeated. But, you know, I guess as we did the edit, we're like, maybe we don't really need it. And it's cool that I guess we didn't.
It still worked out. I mean, you know, knowing that kind of just adds icing onto the cake kind of thing. So it's still a funny, clever thing to see in the movie, because it's kind of unexpected. It kind of comes out of left field. But knowing the tone of the movie at that time, it's not bad. It's pretty funny.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I also like the characterization between Lou and Tina, because there's a deeper story involved with them.
Yeah.
And that gives it more intrigue, because I liked Tina already, because she's, like what you had mentioned, she's the straight character. She gets a little bit more involved in the movie in the second and third acts, and you really root for her, because at first I was thinking, man, she's just being really rude to Jessica in the bar, because Jessica owns the bar, and it's like, oh no, there's more backstory here.
Yeah.
And I really felt, you know, compelled to hope that Tina makes it out all right.
Yeah, we really wanted to make sure that we had a strong foil to Lou, and like a kind of the opposite, the example of what he could be if he, you know, was the person he's meant to be. Mm-hmm. And it was funny, actually. We went very overboard into making sure that Tina was really cool and really badass to make Lou like look more of a loser. But what was funny is when we were in prep right before we were shooting in my office, I kind of put up like a kill board and I put up a list of all the henchmen and who was going to kill them. And I realized only then when I made the kill board, I'm like, holy shit, Tina kills more people than Wolf Cop, which was kind of hilarious to realize. So then we actually went back and added a whole new scene of kills in the forest just so Wolf Cop could compete with Tina.
I'll have to go back and count the kills. But
that's a drinking game. I don't know. People always do Wolf Cop drinking games. I don't know why anyone doesn't do like a take a shot every time someone dies. There's a game for you.
You heard it here first. Approved by the director and writer himself. Wolf Cop drinking game. Take a shot every time somebody dies.
That's a good one.
And also, your posters, that artwork is amazing.
I know. Tom Hodge, the dude designs, did an amazing poster. And it blew me away because it was all images from the movie. But as soon as I saw it, I'm like, well, we can't compete with this. People are going to get like, you know, it's going to dash people's hopes when they watch the actual movie. But it's so cool to look at it and be like, well, no, everything's in there. You've just given it the most flashy, grabby presentation that is just so true to the 80s style we were going for.
And so the tone of the film is more 80s from the generation in which you grew up watching these B-horror movies and also just horror movies in general?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really, at some point, want to get Wolf Cop on VHS.
You could always find somebody that's willing to do it, right?
I'm sure someone could do it. Someone out there actually made, like, mocked up some example art of what it could be and just some person online, and it looked awesome. So we'll see. Maybe one day, if we get lucky, as we go down the road and people want memorabilia, maybe someone will take that upon themselves.
Yeah. Was there anything in the movie that was ad-libbed or kind of just off the cuff that you kept in there?
Oh, yeah, pretty much everything Willie says.
Everything Willie says?
Like, I mean, not everything, but I would say a good chunk of dialogue from Willie, like, you know, there'd be the line in the script and Jonathan Terry would be like, okay, I'll say it, but then after, what would you think if I said this? And it was almost always funnier than what was in the script. So it's like, yes, please do it. You know? So, yeah, a lot of ad-libbing with Tina as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think they were, well, they both have a comedic background. So I think they were, I know Tina is a more serious character, but Amy has a comedic background. So she was always ready with like just the right one-liner or something just to like put Lou in his place. And other than that, I mean, it wasn't so much dialogue improvisation, but a lot of scene improvisation. Like, if things weren't working or, you know, like I said, we had a really short timeline, sometimes we had to take, like, a 4-page scene and condense it into, like, 2.5 because of our schedule or the weather or, you know, we were going to kill a guy in a certain way and the blood rig wasn't working, so we had to get creative and just throw a head against a wall, things like that, you know? Mm-hmm.
It's a weird question. You don't have to tell me if it's true or not, but is the line in which she picks up a human face and she says, and she, I forget what she says, but is that written in the script?
You know what?
Or is that ad-lib?
I will say that is actually in the script. That and what's funny is I was very concerned with the tone of this film. I didn't want it to be overly funny, right? I wanted it to be just kind of messed up and weird and get progressively funnier as Wolf Cop took the scene. And one thing I remember actually doing a read through with friends and cast and crew early in prep, and everybody laughed so hard at that line where she like lifts up the face and Amy does her impression of Lou that I was like, I wonder if this is too far, if we're crossing the line, you know what I mean? Because we had a tone we were going for, but it was so slapsticky and everyone laughed and I'm like, I wonder if this is like jumping the shark here. But obviously, when you're doing a movie like this, you can think that, but you shoot it anyway, and then, you know, cut it in the picture, and I knew I'd be a fool to take it out. It was too funny.
It was a very good line. I laughed pretty hard, because it comes at a time in which you're not really sure if the movie is going ultra-dark, because before that, they're in a bathroom, and it's pretty bloody.
Yeah.
And you're not really sure if the movie is going to go, you know, a little bit more tonally serious, or if it's still the movie that you think that it is, and her line there kind of just really breaks the ice for you.
Yeah, it was a tonal tight walk, and I mean, I know you know, you that's in hindsight, you watch something 50 times and you're like, maybe we should have been a little sillier, but I really had it in my head. I wanted it to feel like a real town and real characters and just kind of give you little hints at stupidness and weirdness and then kind of just explode as Wolf Cop exploded.
Right. So let's talk about some of the production stuff. You guys shot in Saskatchewan in 17 days. And how did you get fundraising? So if somebody is looking to make a movie sort of like this, how do you get fundraising? Or did you go and shoot little bits of it and then show it to some folks and request some cash?
Yeah, I mean, the indie film model is so weird and so rapidly changing that we had no idea how we were going to finance it. And the way we financed it, it's a bit of a story, I'll tell it to you, but I don't think it's going to work for most people because it's a bit of a Hail Mary. I'm heavily inspired by like what Sam Raimi did with The Evil Dead and, you know, how he shot it in his gymnasium and all that.
A lot of handheld shots.
Yeah, it's like an iconic story of independent film production. And, you know, they got funding from some dentists they knew, I guess, some rich dentists. And so myself and some friends said, you know, who work in film said, let's just make this damn movie. I wanted to make Wolf Cop. I didn't think I was going to get a lot of government financing for it. We were lucky enough to get some, but at the time, you're pretty disillusioned, especially when your movie's called Wolf Cop. And I was from a province that at the time didn't have a tax credit, so it was a really weird place to be in. And so what we did is we shot a concept trailer, and it's actually on the disc, on the Blu-ray and the DVD. And we said, this two-minute trailer has to almost work like a short film and show people what this movie is about. It has to show the tone, the weird tone. It has to show the effects and show Leo as Wolf Cop. So we shot the trailer and we made a list of every funding agency we could approach and every rich person we knew we could approach. And while we were researching it, we found online something called Cineku. And Cineku was essentially... they don't like the word competition, but it was like an online platform where people could submit their trailers, which by fate we had just made. And it was 3 months of social media, duking it out with other teams, promoting your project, trying to build an audience and a fan base, and using guerrilla tactics to rise above, right? So we did that. We entered. We had no, it was a Canadian project, so we thought, we don't have a shot in hell with this. Most Canadian films are usually a little more serious or a little more grounded and not exploitation style horror, right? So we entered, and at the end of 3 months, we were lucky enough to be selected. So by being chosen as the Cineku big deal, we were given a guarantee of a budget of $1 million for our film, and a guarantee of a limited theatrical release in Canada. So. Nice. Yeah, so last year our film was actually played theatrically in Canada. It was like one of the greatest joys for an indie filmmaker that I could go to a theater. And I got to sit in a theater and watch a room full of people I didn't know react to the movie. So that was great.
That is great. Did you get a chance to go on any more? Did you submit it to any sort of like more genre-specific film festivals?
It's actually played at a few festivals. I don't have the list, but I know it's honestly played all around the world. You know, it's played at like Fantasia in Montreal. It's played in a few places in the States. It's played in, I think it's going to play in Japan theatrically right away. Mexico, Portugal, on and on. Yeah, Europe.
How awesome is that?
It's crazy. I mean, I would.
Is your phone just going off the hook now?
Not as much as I'd like it to, but we're doing Wolf Cop 2, so that's kind of focused now. But I do hope that I can springboard this into more horror films and more comedies.
Right. So you spoke about Wolf Cop 2, and that's currently in production right now, right?
No, not yet. We're still in development. I've got the script, and we're working on getting financing together. It's Cineku is producing it again. They, you know, through the first one, they're now involved in future Wolf Cops. So they're pulling it together. And our goal, hopefully, is to get it shot in the next few months so it can be out next year.
Yeah. When you're shooting films, so you shot yours in 17 days, how long did you take in the editing room?
It's a bit longer and it's a bit trickier. I mean, I don't have a ton of experience with features, so I don't know what's normal, but I think it was at least 3 months of editing. 3 months of, I mean, we didn't really, many films nowadays edit as they shoot, and we didn't really do that. So it was more like, you know, we're a small team, so we shot the film, took a deep breath, took some days off, and then got into the editing, and I did my cut, and then the producers did their cut, and then we kind of met in the middle, and pushed out a final version that everyone was happy with.
In terms of some pieces of advice that you give for up-and-coming movie folks and directors and writers, what would you say people should probably do?
The advice I would give is kind of the advice I try and give myself and stuff I've been told, which is firstly, maybe do some short films first. It's a great low risk way to figure out where your talent and interest lies. You know, I did like probably 10 short films or more before I did a feature, and some of them were just garbage, and some of them were better than others. And it takes that experience to realize, oh, well, I really am enjoying horror. When I do comedy, I really love it. When I do drama, not so much, you know? So it's finding, it helps you find your voice and your skills, and it also helps you prepare because like short films are like a workout or a sprint, and a feature film is like a marathon. I've done two now, and I'm overwhelmed by how much work it is, and just keeping everything straight and keeping yourself mentally on the ball, because you get asked thousands of questions every day from every person in every department, and you have to care. You have to care about every question, and you have to care about the end result. So I'd say, yeah, my advice is do short films, and whatever you do, finish it. That is, I can't stress that enough. Many people say, like, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. Finish the movie and screen it, even if you hate it. You know, make a 5-minute film, make a 10-minute film, send it to festivals, and more importantly, organize a screening, show it to people, and then people are going to know you're someone who is serious about this.
And do you find that you do horror because you can dip into more, I guess, crazier topics? And I don't mean crazier in a negative way at all. It's just more creative, and you're kind of mixing a lot of different genres that you might have seen growing up, or different animals, or whatever else. I mean, do you find that horror kind of provides that for you, or is it because you just like what you can do with blood and guts and whatever else?
I think it's a little of both. I mean, I think as a writer, I'm drawn towards the absurd. If, you know, I hope to direct many films, and I'd love for someone to bring me an amazing drama that I could sink into. But as a writer, I think I'm just really drawn to absurd, crazy stuff. I love high concept. And horror is a great place to play with those things because you can be so extreme, you can be so weird, you can touch on taboo subjects that, in the real world, it might be harder for people to deal with, you know? And it's just so freeing. And on top of that, the horror community is amazing. You know, I find,
They
yeah,
are.
not just the, like, the other filmmakers are so warm and embracing, and they love sharing their war stories and reaching out to each other. And I feel really embraced by other people, other filmmakers, and more than that, the fans. Like, people are excited. People go to horror conventions and festivals, and yeah, they do that for some other stuff, but I've yet to meet a genre at this indie budget level that's as crazy and passionate as horror fans.
So great. So is there anything that you can give to us in terms of a tease for what the Wolf Cop 2 storyline is going to be?
Yeah, it's in Woodhaven again. It's Lou is evolving. He's getting a little better, but also a little worse. And Tina is back, and she's got to deal with Lou, and they're going to be tested, their friendship, and the town's going to be tested, and a big threat is coming to town, and Wolf Cop thinks he can handle it, and it's going to take all he's got.
That's a really good tease, because I'm thinking right now, like, what other mashup is he thinking right now to come to
Yeah,
town?
and I'm not going to say, but I will say it's going to be a bloodbath, and Wolf Cop thinks he's got it cased. And, you know, it's like the classic, the origin story, you're just figuring out your powers, and you get cocky, and someone's going to be there to knock you down a peg.
Right. I hope at the end, Lou's just, trying to catch a cab or any sort of ride, just like Bruce Banner, in the Hulk TV show. Sad music plays going away.
Yeah, what's funny is when we were doing our first edits of Wolf Cop, you don't have your music, right? So because it's still being composed. So we had to use temp music. And in a couple scenes, we used that sad Bruce Banner piano music. And it was so perfect that, you know, in your head, you're like, God, how much are the rights to this? It's too funny.
That'd be really great if you kind of put that in there. Not the same tone. It depends on how much it costs, but if it's like really similar,
we had a very
mean, just throw it in there.
And we were happy to put our music budget into things like Moonlight Desires and our amazing score by the Shooting Guns.
Yeah, I also love the rap song at the end of the during the credits.
Yeah, that was I had no idea we'd get that. One of our producers, Hugh Patterson, pulled that off, and he knew a hip-hop producer named Factor, and he and Evil Ebenezer made like a song that the first time I heard it, I was like, are you serious? This is for us? This is great.
Yeah, it totally reminded me of the rap song at the end of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 90 version, and it's just like, oh, wow, it's a rap song about the Ninja Turtles. And then in this one, it's like, it's a rap song about Wolf Cop. This is awesome.
I got so excited when I heard it because he had like told the story to them, so I was like listening, and I'm like, oh my god, they're rapping about everything that's actually in the movie. This is heaven.
And it's in your final cut. So, Lowell, this has been great. Where can people find more of your work, or where can they find more about Wolf Cop, or anything that you're doing?
I think the best place is usually on Twitter. I'm on there every day at some point. So it's a Lolo Film, LOLOFILM. And, you know, I talk to people online. If people insult or love the movie, I'll chat with them, and I'll share pictures, videos, and any exciting updates I get in the near future.
That's great. So you actually interact with folks that might not be as positive on the movie with you.
I try to. If people just rip it apart, I'm not going to get into a conversation.
Sure.
It's
yeah,
going.
That's just like trolling.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
I don't talk to trolls, but if you're really positive, I'm going to be very friendly to you. And if you're maybe a little less positive, I might send a joke or a question your way.
Nice. Joke or a question.
Yeah, depending on your tone. Yeah.
So awesome. So that was Lolo Film, LOLOFILM,
yeah,
on Twitter. Okay, great. And Wolf Cop 2 is probably coming out maybe end of 2016?
Yeah. Again, I'll be all over it on Twitter. And you can also go to wolfcop.com and follow Wolf Cop on Twitter. Wolf Cop's very sassy on Twitter. And they'll be up.
Yeah. Is that a person in your marketing team?
Yes, it is.
Okay, because yeah, I was like, we had some previous conversation on Twitter, which folks can read, but I was like, I don't know if this is Lowell telling me that he agrees that his IQ is 190.
No, that's not me, and believe me, I guarantee you, if Wolf Cop is complimenting me, there's some sarcasm involved.
Totally understood, but it's true that your IQ is 190.
We'll say that, sure. Thanks.
Yeah, that'll be the hashtag. Great. Well, Lowell Dean, thank you very much for your time. And everybody, if you haven't seen Wolf Cop, please check it out and also listen to our review of it. And hopefully we'll get a chance to speak with Lowell and or review Wolf Cop 2 when it comes out later in 2016. So again, Lowell, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Abraham. Nice talking to you.